is a very special medium.
There's a magic to radio that's like nothing else.
People are making breakthroughs.
I mean, the theme, I think, is brilliant. And every year, it should be World of Sound.
Profound and moving in a way that sneaks up on you.
It's just honest, and I think that comes across.
The Radio Academy Festival 2025 official podcast, brought to you by Rayo.
Hello and welcome back to a Radio Academy Festival special for the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Adam Skin and this is the second part of a three-part takeover looking at everything that happened at this year's Radio Festival in London. This week we're going to have our very own Eurovision party where we hear from the BBC's Will Wilkin and this year's UK Eurovision entry, Remember Monday. We also hear from the CEO of Prison Radio Association, Phil Maguire. And we take our first trip to the Dolby Library stage. But first, this week, we're going to head to the ARIA stage, where Tom Jackson caught up with ARIA winners for Best Factual Single, Monica Whitlock and Penny Murphy.
My Whole Life is a Secret. It's an incredible story, been on Radio 4 on the World Service, and I'm joined by Monica Whitlock, presenter, producer involved, and Penny Murphy, the editor of the piece. So coming to you, Monica, first, why do you feel audio has been such a great medium for allowing us to transport the listener to faraway places? Because listening to some of the clips in the talk just now, I felt like I was there. I could reach out and touch it.
I think just voice on its own has a real immediacy. And in this particular programme, Layla, who's the narrator and the character who is there throughout the programme, that's the only way she can communicate anyway. So this programme is something that could only be on the radio. We couldn't film it. It wouldn't really work as a written piece. So it's really pure audio. And what you hear throughout the programme is only one voice and some effects from the street, very mild. There's no kind of heavy-handed sound design. There's no other voices. It's very pure.
And that story of Layla telling in a diary format her life living in Afghanistan under incredible restrictions. How did you come to the diary format for this piece?
Well, it just seemed essential, really, because the question of, to which the programme has an answer is what it's like living stuck in your house in current Afghanistan. So how else would you tell that apart from as a diary? It's a day in, day out, day in, day out. And one of the things that Layla said afterwards, that she didn't realise, because to her, her life is completely boring. She didn't realise it would be of interest to anybody.
And coming to you, Penny, when Monica came along with this idea, I mean, what was going through your head when you heard about this connection with Layla, the story that she was able to tell?
It didn't quite evolve like that. Monica and I work together. We speak to each other all the time. We spoke a lot about the situation for women in Afghanistan, and we agreed that Monica would kind of go away and see if she could make something work, and then came back a few days later and said, I think I've got a character who this might work with. And then it evolved from there as to how we were going to make it, the diary format, the fact it was going to be one voice. So it's, there's no kind of eureka moment when you go, this is how I'm going to make this program. It just evolves through working on it and through conversation and research.
Coming back to those sound recordings that really paint that picture and set the scene, Layla actually was able to record that through her phone secretly. Talk us through what it was like hearing those clips for the first time.
Goodness. I mean, the thing about them is, as Monica says, we used every single bit of the recordings. Every scrap of audio that Layla sent us was in the program. And I think the thing about radio is, you know, we use sound to paint pictures, and the, you know, the fact that some of it sounds slightly muffled because of the way she recorded it just makes it more powerful. And, you know, there's a bit of music in there, which is the music that she and her friends are listening to. And it just brings it home to you.
And they are very scratchy recordings. And I think the fact that it's not clean sound just shows you that it's all real, really. I mean, there's no sort of clever effects or extraneous overproduction. It's very simple and it's very simply told, and that makes you hang on to her words. And I think something that's very particular to Layla is how relatable she is. She could be any young person stuck in this situation. So if you listen to the programme, one of the things that she really wants is a cat or a dog. She is bored to tears and sits in the garden listening to music. And that could be any young person in any country in the world in that situation.
And the theme of this year's festival is World of Sound. Why is it important that radio and places like the World Service showcase international stories?
We live in a very chaotic, fast-moving, rather worrying world. And the World Service, in telling stories and showcasing, you know, series like Assignment, which is what this program featured on, it gives you a sense of what's happening to other people, but it gives you a sense of your place in the world as well, which is very important.
And we'll come back to you, Monica, to just reflect on the talk now being done. How was it sharing this at the festival, and how do you reflect on that ARIA win now?
Well, we're really delighted about the award and enjoyed the festival. We enjoyed the conversation. It really was a conversation. It wasn't very sort of staged. And Layla herself is just thrilled to bits by the attention and, blown away.
Just listen to that talk. It was absolutely wonderful. Really, really moving how they managed to source the initial interviews and continue that communication is to be applauded, really, and to bring it to public attention. Obviously award-winning, quite rightly so. I think it's very moving. Obviously, they haven't been able to use the lady's voice, so they've had to use an actress. But you can still feel the power in what's being described as this horrendous lifestyle. And it does need to be brought to attention, and that's exactly what these ladies have done and the producers. It really must be applauded. I think more awareness needs to be brought to these matters, but to be able to have that personal journey and to reach into someone's life directly on the ground upwards, I'm sure most people wouldn't have had any idea really the gravity of what they go through.
Why is it important for events like this to showcase these stories?
For exactly this purpose, I think, you know, what expectations might be from these events could vary, but would you expect to hear a really raw story like that, a human interest story? We often expect it's going to be mingling and networking, etc., things that are affecting our day-to-day lives in radio here in the UK, for example, but this takes it to a far greater picture and a much deeper level that is completely valid when you hear human interest stories like that.
And a massive thank you to Monica and Penny for chatting with Tom there. And they've actually sent over a few of Layla's clips that appear in the documentary. And here is just a small extract to whet your appetite.
Today, I'll go out and record the sounds of the city. I'm inside a rickshaw, so it's quite dark. Most of the rickshaw drivers play music illegally. But when they see the Taliban, they stop quickly.
And if you want to listen to the whole episode, the whole half an hour documentary is still available on BBC Sounds. If you just type in Our Whole Life is a Secret, you'll find it on there as a part of Radio 4's Crossing Continents series. Next, we're taking a trip back to the festival stage, where Izzy Brand caught up with Phil Maguire, the CEO of a charity called Prison Radio Association.
My name is Phil Maguire. I am the CEO of a charity called the Prison Radio Association. And I guess I'm here today at the Radio Festival in a couple of capacities, partly in my capacity as a trustee of the Radio Academy, but also because I am a co-founder and chair of something called Prison Radio International. And I'm here to be in conversation with the one and only Louis Theroux, who we've just come off the stage together. We had a conversation about his visit to National Prison Radio at Brixton and about the work that we do internationally, which he's very interested in. And I surprised him at the end of the interview by inviting him to become a patron of the charity, and he's agreed to do that.
And how much of a surprise was it? Was it completely, did he have any inkling it was coming?
I don't think anybody told him. I hope not. But I was fairly confident he was going to say yes, because he is a big fan of the work that we do.
Amazing. And loads of people flooded in to see it. What would be the one thing you'd want them to take away from that chat?
I think one of the things we talked about was the work that we do. We've been working for nearly two decades and really under the radar, working quietly in prisons, making a difference to people's lives and using this incredible medium of audio that we all love to do just that. And we do lots of things as well as that. So we run National Prison Radio. We make podcasts for a public audience. We've got an independent production company making programs for the BBC and others. We've got an incredible talent development program supporting people when they leave prison. And we run Prison Radio International. But one of the things that we're really focused on in the coming period is that we want to put ourselves out there a bit more. We want to move the needle on the public debate, discussion around prisons. We want to use our expertise around prisons and criminal justice and our access to people who have been or are in prison to create really impactful programs that move people and make them think really hard about crime and punishment.
And just to finish on, I know in the chat you were asked about the future of prison radio. Yeah. I'd like to know your thoughts on the future of radio as a concept. In 20 years, where's radio going to
be? Oh my God. You want to ask a radio futurologist that question, not a charity CEO. I think that the death of radio has been greatly exaggerated many times. We have seen technological innovations come in. I remember life before podcasts. I remember streaming This American Life on a very slow internet connection onto a computer and listening to it out loud on a speaker on a tinny computer. These days, we're all carrying mobile phones. We're all carrying podcasts in our pockets. I think the medium of audio is beautiful because for most people, they listen in their ears with headphones on, or they listen while they're doing something else, driving a car, cooking dinner, washing up. And it's such an intimate medium. People, I think it was Alistair Cook, the legendary BBC broadcaster Alistair Cook, once said that radio is like TV, but with better pictures, because people paint the pictures in their minds. So I think the future of radio is bright. I think technology will change. People will come in and do innovative things. Radio is becoming much more visualized. But I think that intimate connection between somebody speaking into a microphone and somebody listening is the magic that keeps us all interested and that will never disappear.
How great is that? That Louis Theroux is now a patron of the Prison Radio Association. That's great. Just to remind you that this is the second of a three-part Radio Academy Festival special brought to you by Rayo for the Radio Academy podcast, where we're taking over for 3 weeks and we're talking all things that happened at this year's festival. And now we're going to take our first trip to the Dolby Library stage. I'm really excited about this one. It is described as a state-of-the-art immersive audio showcase. Basically, an unreal surround sound experience. Now, a couple of weeks ago on the Radio Academy podcast, Georgie had a special episode all about the Dolby Library stage, and she caught up with the likes of Kay Matchalot from Media Art Exploration, Richard Addis, a music engineer from Dolby, and had a really lovely long chat with Dr. Sean Williams about the fusion of science and sound. Just search for the Radio Academy podcast episode titled The Fusion of Science and Sound, and you'll find the full chat there, and it is really worth having a listen to. If you enjoy this next chat, our amazing Ruth caught up with Dr. Sean and Professor Catherine Loveday at the festival to talk about how the day had gone.
The talk was The Positive Power of Music, and yep. Today we're here, obviously, at the Radio Academy Festival. What do you think from a broader perspective of music bringing people together, and particularly from the industry as well, to have all of these people in one place, you know, coming from the world of radio, the power of that?
I think the thing about broadcasters is that they are always running and they are always on and there's always a deadline. And very few of us, I've been in broadcasting for 40 years, very few of us take time to sit with other people and just have a quiet moment where we can experience something together. And we got to do that in the session because we had a moment where we were just finding our focus, taking a breath.
It was beautiful, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Just letting the music come in, but also closing your eyes, concentrating on your body and your breath rather than all the distractions around you. And I think to be able to do that with a room full of very busy broadcasters and listen to amazing music was great. And Catherine's done a load of research as well on music and how it affects our mood. And you could see it, couldn't you, Catherine?
Yeah, I think watching people just relax and be absorbed by the music. But also, I think in addition to the music, the sound of that creaking where you were...
When I was out in the woods.
Yeah, because actually there is also some really important work that shows that if we just stop and look at things and recognise our surroundings, which we never do, we just run around all the time. And what I think it is a reminder of the really kind of amazing, awful things, or as in full of awe,
yes,
things that are really awe-inspiring around us all the time.
When you talk about awe, I think of positive, you know, the world, I'm from the world of positive psychology as well, and I think your tree sounds took me back to the Sonic Sunset Sonic that Mick Ryan's doing in the Dolby Atmos Library as well, because you're hearing the sounds of nature, which has a musicality, like you're saying about voice, Catherine. It has, your voice has a musicality to it. Like, we have music in nature.
Music is everywhere. Music is the first thing we do when babies babble. Music is in nature. If you think of, you know, like the trees creaking, but it might be the waves. It can be anything. It can be the birds. Music and nature are inextricably linked. And so is the way it reacts to our body. So I think there's something as well about radio. People who understand radio really understand sound and the power of sound. And I think that's why it's lovely to be here at the Radio Festival, because you have a room full of people who understand that radio and sound is a craft, and you can create emotion and you can absorb people with it. And that is incredibly powerful and very special, I think.
And you notice the shift in the room with the meditations and the, when you dropped in the different musical pieces, like you just felt the shift because you're so present, as you said, Catherine. Yeah.
And I think for me with Radio 3 Unwind, that's one of the things that it does so brilliantly, is it makes you feel very present. It allows you to feel really focused. I mean, I have been personally really impressed with the programming, because it hits so many of the markers that we need in the day, you know, just giving us a little bit of kind of up and down, but also that focus and the relaxation at the same time is brilliant.
Yeah. It's been an absolute joy to present, I have to say. It has been, you know, I've been doing it for many decades now, but actually doing a programme like this where you get to listen to the most amazing music, but also bring insights from psychology, whether it be Catherine or, you know, just engaging with the music. I think it's bringing together positive psychology and music and broadcasting. So it's like a win-win-win for me.
I also, you know, you talked about the impact of music. You know, when we're feeling sad, we go for sad songs. Yeah. We want to wallow, we want to sit in that, we want to feel. And it helps people who can't find the language or words or vocabulary to have a conversation about how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, what is your go-to piece or song if you want to be uplifted? So as it is the positive power of music, what would be something you think, I'm going to put that on? What would it be for you?
Oh, that's a really hard question. And I'll tell you why it's a hard question, is because in our research, we ask these questions all the time and people change their mind every single day. I mean, I might say something like Walking on Sunshine
today. I
won't today.
Hold you to it forever. You could, if it's different by the time the podcast comes out, that's fine.
Beatles, Love, 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 always lifts me because it reminds me of my wedding, but also it kind of connects me with so many different generations of people and with place and you know, it just brings back so many great memories, but it's also a brilliant song.
So yeah, it has those meaning making markers and, you know, the temporal landmarks for that in your own, you said your own history as well. Amazing. What about you, Charlotte?
I tend to be drawn more to the kind of minor chords, adagios, you know, the slower reflective stuff. So, but if I'm looking for something to give me energy and uplift, then it would probably be Aretha Franklin or Respect or something like that, because I saw the Soul Nation prom that was on this year with Trevor Nelson, and it was just amazing, and every single one of those soul songs spoke to my heart and lifted me up and energized me. So that would be the sort of thing. But Mozart can do that. Rachmaninoff actually does that for me, either two or three, both of those do it for me. So you can find it in the music of our youth, probably, Catherine, I'm thinking. But you know, the things that connect us to people and places. But you can also do it, and there's a lot of classical music that can give you that energy and stimulate and excite as well.
Carl Jenkins is one of my favourites.
Oh, Carl Jenkins, yes. Which bit?
Adamus. That's it, yes.
Yes. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Beau. Thank you for just bringing a brilliant talk to the Radio Festival today. I'm sure it's a packed out room at the Dolby Atmos Library. So thank you. And look forward to hearing more on BBC Radio 3 Unwind.
Every day, 9 till 12.
Thank you.
I thought it was a really different thing to happen in the festival. I've just come out of the Radio 3 Unwind with Dr. Sian. The mindfulness, the science behind listening to music and the effects it can have on the brain while you're working. Also while you're trying to chill out. I thought that was all so fascinating to hearing the actual evidence of music and science and how it interacts with the brain. It was brilliant.
You heard them, BBC Three Unwinds. Make sure to give it a listen. I was just thinking about what my happy song would be, and I think at the moment I've got to go for National Express by The Divine Comedy. What a tune to like dance around to. You know, a song you can sing and dance around the kitchen to. That is quintessentially the perfect happy song. Now it's time to grab a bowl of some snacks, open something fizzy, and prepare for a Eurovision party. This year, Eurovision turned 70, and the final talk on the festival stage this year celebrated that. We'll catch up with the UK's entry, Remember Monday, very shortly, but first, our very own Eurovision superfan, Tom Jackson, chats with the BBC's Will Wilkin.
We're talking Eurovision, the last talk celebrating the 70th anniversary, which is this year, this coming year. And Will Wilkin is with me, a commissioning executive at BBC Music, worked on a lot of different things, as well as Eurovision, like Sidetracked with Annie and Nick, and Rise and Fall, and various other podcast titles as well. Well, people will know Eurovision as the big TV spectacle every May, gather around the TV with maybe a bowl of popcorn and watch it with the family. But there's a lot more to it now, and it's involving a lot of the audio industry.
Yeah, Eurovision is a massive audio event. Not only is a live listen on Radio 2, and how Radio 2 have expanded their coverage in the last 4 years to include semi-finals and then Scott take his breakfast show to Basel this year, and Radio 2's commitment to Eurovision as one of their major moments, quite rightly, because it is, and they've expanded that, certainly in terms of audience reach and size for the audio coverage of the festival, but also how they do their social, don't forget. But also the other side of the audio is of course how people consume the songs and the build up and the ease and ability to consume the songs, whether that be through radio play. And in the talk I plucked a stat out of the air for the girls, telling them they were 248 stations they'd been on, and you know that's equivalent. Sam was on 271 and Ollie was on 250 something, and May a similar amount. You know, Eurovision as a moment is the breadth of it and the coverage, both internationally in the radio market, but also nationally in the radio market, is huge. In the last 4 years, we've seen over a billion impacts through radio play for Eurovision artists in the UK. We've seen them appear on pretty much every radio brand, whether it be as a song or an interview. We've seen an event that has been seen as a BBC Radio 2 moment or backed thing, and therefore not necessarily has been a commercial enterprise, become a commercial enterprise with commercial networks getting behind it because they understand how big it's built and the zeitgeist of it.
I was going to say, I mean, recently there's been a sort of supercharged audience interest in Eurovision, particularly off the back of the UK hosting on behalf of Ukraine and Sam Ryder sort of coming second as well. Has that contributed to that expansion then, that growth?
I think it's several things all moving in what at once in the UK. Absolutely, Sam's success in 22 coming second to obviously Kalush Orchestra, who are the Ukrainian entrant. Then it being hosted in 23 in Liverpool and the breadth of coverage that the BBC had around that, it felt like Glastonbury, right?
Couldn't escape it. It was everywhere.
It was incredible driving into Liverpool. You're 30 miles out and you're getting banners already. Then into 2024 with Ollie, a hugely established artist who wanted to do Eurovision and finished a very respectable 18th. Into this year and working with a less known artist like Remember Monday, who had absolutely incredible vocal. each year has been different, but each year has caused reasons for growth. And, you know, I talked about the radio growth and the coverage of the growth, but also the streaming figures and the charting figures. In 22, we had three top 10s. This year, we also had three top 40s in terms of Eurovision artists off the back. We've seen Eurovision artists go on to play major events. The girls just played Summertime Ball. Sam played Radio 2 in the Park. Ollie played Radio 1's Big Weekend. Eurovision artists are, in the British sense, still in demand and will always be in demand.
And it's something that's been going now for 70 years, and that consistent interest has stayed there the whole time. What do you think it is about Eurovision in particular, considering how everything else in the audio land is sort of constantly changing, that's sort of kept it strong and true the whole time, whole way along?
It's a live event. It is main stage, Glastonbury, World Cup final. Eurovision this year probably only really have been rivaled by the Lionesses winning the Euros. It's that thing that Traitors does brilliantly, or Love Island does well. Like, if you miss the live moment of it, you've missed out, because you know about it and everyone's talking about it already. It's not a thing where you go, oh, I've been watching the studio on Apple TV and you should go and watch it. It's like you miss out, you know you've missed out, because everybody's talking about it, whether it be in person or whether it be on social or whether it be on WhatsApp or anything like that. And so Eurovision always has that live appeal. It always has an undercurrent of interest based on the status of Europe at the time. And it also has that love of music and pop music at the heart of it. And it's very much built on its history. ABBA, you know, Gina G, like, you could trace, I know I've missed swathes of time out there, but like, you can trace through time great artists that have risen from it and continue to. And it gives the audience every year a great curiosity to see what this year will throw up.
And the immediacy is something that radio and audio is able to deliver in an incredible way.
Yeah, and I do major artist content for the BBC, which is my involvement in Eurovision. I also commission podcasts. You couldn't do Eurovision in a podcast unless a podcast becomes a live program you're then streaming on a YouTube as a podcast. So it then gets really convoluted. It is a live moment you need to tap into. And linear services, more and more, are marked out by their success around these major miss it, miss out live moments. And I say marked out by their success. I think Radio 2 hits all the time, both in the build-up and the night of. And we're very lucky to be supported more broadly by an amazing radio industry who want to get behind an artist for their story, for their content, for their song. And in the last 4 years, we've seen, as I said, Global, Bauer, the BBC, major podcast platforms doing, you know, Eurovision Cast or Rob's Eurovision Podcast, really the community feel of it. I went to the Sidemen football game at Wembley, what was it, about 6 months ago, maybe more? It was like 90,000 people were there to watch this football match, right? And the only thing I could equate it to was Eurovision. And they said, why? And I said, because everyone's supporting the same team. Ostensibly, everybody's there to have a great time with the music. And it was the same time in that Sidemen football match, because everyone was there to see the people play rather than support a specific team. And Eurovision, although obviously people are different nationalities, it's quite hard to understand the absolute competitiveness, but also the absolute joy that other people's artists bring to you.
It's all about the love of the music, and you've been involved in Eurovision now for a number of years. And the question on the tip of my tongue, a lot of people will come and ask you, oh, who is it next year? But I want to know how easy it is keeping the secret, because it's often one of the last acts to be announced. Has that got any easier over time?
No, it never gets easier. Absolutely never gets easier, because of the excitement of the project. However, you are aware that the best chance they have is by keeping the secret, because the excitement, you want it to come as one rather than in drips and drabs. I think naturally with any release of anything, pretty much the closer you get to it, the more people are involved and the more chance there is that people could find out. But even if there is a rumour flying around prior, it doesn't ruin the excitement of the moment, because I remember having a chat with Scott this year about the girls. I said, you know what, it's not a Eurovision artist until Scott Mills says it is. Like, it isn't, because ultimately Radio 2 is the sort of broadcast partner announcing the song this year, and the BBC delegation led by Andrew announcing who the artist is. That's when it becomes official. And all of that interest, and it might be X, Y, or Z, and people trying to guess, and, you know, bookies getting involved or whatever, that's because people love it, and because people want to know, and because people want the best for our artists.
And to round off, Will, how did it feel for yourself and the girls and everyone up on the stage to be the ones closing today's Radio Academy Festival, rounding off the day?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And there have been some amazing both speakers and presentations, but actually I did a one-to-one session before. I met some wicked people from all walks of audio, and the world of what audio is only expanding in terms of people, how interact with it, you know, how they use it as a medium, you know, we talked about podcasting live, how it works alongside social and social platforms. It's been not only brilliant in terms of the breadth and thought around the different talks, presentations, but actually also the people that have been in the room bouncing off each other, old friends, new friends, you know how it is.
I can't stress how amazing this last session was all about Eurovision. It was so good and as positive and as uplifting as watching Eurovision is on the telly or on the radio. And I was lucky enough to catch up with Remember Monday after they'd finished this session. Can you take me back to how it felt when you stepped out on stage at the Eurovision finals?
Sickness.
No.
Yeah.
It's such a weird one to try and relive because I think we'd done such a grueling rehearsal process where we'd basically recreate that exact moment 8 times in a row. So by the time the 8th time came round, we kind of felt sad because it was over. We really didn't want it to come to an end. So, yeah, I think my initial emotion was, oh, this is the last time we're ever going to do it.
Yeah, that definitely hit me the minute the song finished.
Oh, gosh.
We were just all burst into tears.
I genuinely don't remember it. I know that's bad. I think I've
blacked it out. It's on YouTube.
I know, yeah. I'll watch it later.
Go back in time. What's the process like, you know, becoming the UK's entry to Eurovision?
I don't know if they do it the same way every year, but we kind of essentially did a little audition. I know that there were a few other acts that they were also auditioning to be the Eurovision act. And yeah, we did that audition and then they really kept us waiting a while. It felt like months, but it was actually only a couple of weeks. But then they kind of said, listen, we want it to be you, but the song that we had auditioned with wasn't quite us. We didn't feel like it was us and they didn't feel like it was very us. So they were like, we want you to write a song for Eurovision. So then that was the process for a number of weeks. So yeah, it was kind of a bit of a whirlwind getting the gig, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And what was that process like writing What the Hell Just Happened? Did you have to tailor it specifically for Eurovision?
Yeah, oh my God. It was a very intense brief that had been created by both us and the BBC and whoever else was involved. And yeah, there was 1,000 different references and all these things that, you know,
we wanted to hit.
There's so many things that you want to hit, like the song has to be 3 minutes and we wanted an a cappella moment, we wanted obviously big harmonies, we wanted big voices, we wanted sustained notes. There's so many things, so it's quite hard to write for such a specific thing, but there's about 40 songs or something in the backlog that
also came out during that bit.
How has radio as a medium supported you on your journey so far?
Well, do you know what, I think I'm a bad musician because I don't think I quite clocked until the last year or so of our career how like actually vital radio is for an artist. Without a shadow of a doubt is the reason that the song charted. It's without a shadow of a doubt a reason that the song had so much support overseas as well. Like, we're so grateful and you know, it's such a lovely community actually to kind of be part of. And yeah,
there's nothing better than turning up to a radio station and doing that morning show live.
Oh, it's
the atmosphere is every single station that we've done an in-person interview with has honestly been so fun. We could remember all of them. They've all been brilliant.
And what does it mean that stations have carried on supporting you with the new single Happier being playlisted on Radio 2, for example? How important is that for you?
Oh my god, it's so important. Now we know it's everything to us and we really, really appreciate it. And we will continue to release music and hope and pray that radio picks it up and supports it. But yeah, thank you very much.
That's fabulous. What is next for Remember Monday?
Well, we've just announced it really in there, which was kind of, we weren't planning to do that, but we have a new single coming out. We won't tell you when maybe yet.
Yeah, we won't tell you when, but we're going on tour as well. Around the same time.
There we are. There's so much more to look forward to coming from Remember Monday very, very soon. And to finish our little Eurovision party this week, I did say last week I'd play you a little bit more of their brand new, unreleased, unannounced, exclusive single. So here you go. There we are, that's Remember Monday with More Than Ever Now. It's coming out soon, some point in the near future. Even they don't know. So we've got time for this week on the Radio Academy podcast, Radio Festival Special, supported by Rayo. But the good news is we're back again next week. It'll be the third part of this three-part special, and we're going to go big. We're going to take another trip to the Dolby Library, where we speak with Nick Ryan, Steve Taylor's going to take us on a radio tour of the world, and we chat with all four stage hosts as they recap how amazing this year's radio festival has been. And we have an exclusive interview with Louis Theroux, talking about his chat with Phil Maguire about prison radio and how amazing radio is as a medium as well. So make sure to keep your eyes and your ears peeled, as the next episode will drop next Wednesday. And if you haven't listened to episode one yet, I definitely recommend going back and giving it a listen now. This episode was produced by Adam Skin, with the amazing help from the super talented Tom Jackson, Ruth Cooper-Dixon and Izzy Brand, absolute legends, running around up and down a million flights of stairs all day, grabbing all these incredible interviews. I've got some super exciting news to bring to you. Our next Foot in the Door event is at the University of Sunderland on the 15th of October. Join us on the day to find out more about breaking into the audio industry and network with industry leaders. To book a place, go to radioacademy.org. That's radioacademy.org. These events are incredible. They're a vital part of the radio industry. And don't just take it from me. Take it from Radio 1 Anthems presenter Matt Hallsworth.
Having been to a couple of the Radio Academy's Foot in the Door events, I cannot stress enough how engaging it is to be in a room full of not only people who love all things audio, but to actually be connected with the people who hire new talent and can give the best advice that you're looking for. It's always been a great space when I've been to these events to strengthen existing connections that you might only know on an email or online, as well as form brand new ones too, both those who are already established in the industry and the peers you'll be working alongside in the future too. It's also a great event to widen your knowledge of the industry landscape and learn new things, and I would recommend it to absolutely everyone.
I couldn't agree more, Matt. To book your place for the 15th of October at the University of Sunderland, go to radioacademy.org.
The Radio Academy Festival 2025 official podcast. Brought to you by Rayo.